let's try touch on it a little bit today. We started almost at the end. We really need to understand the beginning. The Shoresh is, if you understand that you have a unique shlichus, you have a unique purpose in this world, and because of that you're given unique tools to fulfill that purpose, then you're never jealous of anybody else. The plumber who took his bag of tools and understood what he's supposed to do because he looked at his tools. With me? If you want to know what your unique job in the world is you look at the tools you've been given. And you'll know what you're supposed to do in the world, right?
The plumber chose us.
We're talking about where you were given the tools.
You give the plumber.
So you don't know what to do with the tools.
If I would give you a bag of tools, if I would take you all down to a building site, assuming you credit me with a remote amount, at least some decent amount of intelligence, and I put each person in a different spot in that building site and give them a bag of tools to do. I give a bag of tools with what to work with. But I don't tell you what to do. You should be able to work out what to do by the mere fact of this is where he happens to be with this set of tools. So that's what Hashem did. Hashem put us in this world in a certain place and time, certain parents, certain situations, whatever, and gave us a bag of tools. If you take a good look at what those tools are, you'll know exactly what your purpose in the world is.
No, it sounded like your example was a plumber. He chose to be a plumber, so therefore he's got plumbing tools.
Fine. But I'm talking about Hashem gave us a set of tools, and we can choose to use them. So the guy who recognizes in his tools the plumbing job on the building site, he's not jealous of the electrician because he doesn't have electrician's tools, because he recognizes it's nothing to do with him. It's the same here. If a person, I'm talking about those who are looking at a person's tools, a person has to sit down and work out what his bag of tricks looks like. Who am I really? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What am I supposed to do this before you're 18, 19? Most of us don't do it till we have a midlife crisis at about 40, 50, and then we start like doing what you should have done between the mitzvah and 18. That's what the teenage years are for, to find out who you really are by pushing yourself to all the extreme limits. Kosher way of doing it. But if we're accepting the fact that we have a unique tafkid in this world and that we're an Olam Malim, and my world has nothing to do with your world, we better get to understand and know who this world is and what this world's supposed to be doing here. If I'm Kol HaOlam and I have a unique tafkid and I am Kol HaOlam, then I better find out who I am. And the way you do that is by looking at what kelim you were given. Well, that's another discussion. It's a fundamentally important discussion. It's a long discussion. If you want to look at it properly, you want to go into this. If you didn't do this before you were 20, 25, it's good to do it now. Rabbi Tetz has a shiur called Defining One's Role. And there's another one called Closing the Circle. They're kind of the same shiur. They overlap quite a bit. It's good to go through those shiur. I cannot imagine a more important subject. We're coming at it from a slightly different aspect. He's saying, look at the Yisurim, look at the Nisoinus Hashem gave you, and recognize those are uniquely yours. Of course, if you've done the work, and you know who you are and what your job is, when the Nisoinus come, and you've got the Kalim to deal with them, that's an enormous simcha. If you know that you're a plumber, and you know what your tools are, and you've understood them, and you've analyzed exactly what your bag of tricks is for, so when the pipe bursts, that's an enormous simcha. You're going to have a lot of fun fixing it. Because you know what tools to use, you know how to use them, you're good at using them. So then the yisurim, the suffering, the nisoinus that come along are a simcha, because you have the kelim to deal with them. Very often the yisurim are overwhelming for us because we're not to do. I'm overwhelmed, I can't, because you haven't got in touch with who you are. You don't recognize this is part of your, this is your unique mission in the world.
But the plumber's only going to be happy if it's somebody else's pipe. Once it's the pipe in his house, he's still going to be stressed.
No. Leaking faucet. Oh, okay, dear. He knows exactly what to do. He's got the kelim, he's got the tools, he knows exactly the monkey wrench, he knows where the stock are, whatever, and he goes, enormous simcha, he was able to fix the faucet. Whether it's his test or not, I'm just... Once again, you can't chew this moshel down to the last molecule. I'm just saying, you got to take what you can take from this. But what difference does it make where it is? What difference does it make where it is? Your job in the world is to fix burst pipes. So if there's a burst pipe, he's happy to fix them because he knows how to do it. He does it well. It's a simple caveat. What you do what you're good at, and you enjoy doing what you're good at, and you're good at what you enjoy. And those two things work together. this guy enjoys fixing pipes, so who cares whose pipe it is?
But it's not his ring. It's a challenge. It's not his ring.
Whatever you want to call it, an isoyin, yusurim, a challenge, whatever. No, you know. But if you recognize that this challenge, struggle, opportunity, whatever you want to call it, is on your path, and it's your unique path, you don't get freaked out, you don't flip out and say, well, I'm here, it's not for me, look at him, he doesn't, what's good to do with you? He's an electrician, you're a plumber. Of course he doesn't have a monkey wrench, he's got other kinds of tools.
It's difficult, Marie, but you are happy to do this one.
Only if you recognize that it's your tough kid.
Yes.
We spend a lot of time doing things that aren't really our tough kid, and we don't really know what our tough kid is, we don't really know what we're living for, we don't know what our unique mission in this world is, and we go around bumbling around hoping one day that, you know, we're going to find out what I'm living for. You're supposed to do that before you start going grey.
But Noach said, if you don't know what you're willing to die for, you haven't begun to live.
That's something else. It's another aspect of this. It's an aspect of it. When you discover, that's a late Loshon of the Maseilas Yesharim. When you discover what you're living for, then you put every ounce of your koichos into it. That becomes your passion, your mission in life. Nothing else distracts you from that. If you, when you were defining your life's role as a teenager, going through those years and discovering all the potential you have and getting in touch with all the possibilities, right? And then closing your circle and coming to the conclusion that what you are in this world to be and what you're supposed to be is the best baseball hitter in the world, right? Let's say that's what your kind of conclusion was. Then you don't waste time playing soccer or Pac-Man. Because you know that you have to become the best baseball player in the world, and you put every ounce of your energy and koichos into doing that. When you eat, it's because how can I use that energy to be a better baseball player? When you go on holiday, it's in order to rest up so that the new season starts, you're fired up to be the best baseball player. You pump iron in the gym and you run around the block and you stand there hitting balls out of out of the park 9 hours a day, because understand, you don't go watch ballet because unless that's going to help you relax or whatever, so that you can be a better baseball player. But everything is now filtered through, how can I be the best baseball player? How's this going to advance my mission in life? Every Jew has to have a mission statement. That's what Ramlach's talking about. When you discover what you're ready to die for, now you know what you're living for. Because now you know. You're not going to waste your time on a lot of narishkat when you've discovered the thing you need to give up your life for. Life takes on a whole different meaning, I guess. That's what they tell me. Once asked of Tetz many, many years ago. What's the essential difference between Mir Rav Simcha Wasserman? Now, I mean, I wasn't asking what's the difference between me, because he was a human being and I was barely out of the, he was a giant of a human being, whatever, but I was asking the essential difference. So he's learning Torah Mitzvah, so he's doing it better than me, he knows it more than me, he knows, he's more of a, you know, he's but essentially, what's the difference? So he said to me the following. He said, he knows what his mission in this world is. He's just trying to do it better and better. You're still trying to discover what you're living for. That's an essential difference. You find somebody who knows what he's living for? You knew Rav Noach?
Yeah.
He was a guy who knew what he was living for, knew what he was ready to give up his life for, and he was undistractable. You could not distract him. And I tried many times to distract him. You could not, and I'm not talking about narishkat. But do you know, with big missions? He told me once, he said, I've only got one bullet. I wanted to open up a program at Shatov for Off the Derech kids. And I went to him. He said, it's a wonderful thing. It's probably a bigger mitzvah than what I'm doing. Go do it. But I've only got one bullet. I'm
single-minded.
And that's why they couldn't get on with each other, by the way. That's why the Rav Noachs and the Rav Mendel Weinbachs and the, what's his name, Rosenblum, who started Machon Shlomo or whatever, couldn't work together. They couldn't work together. That wasn't a chesaron, it was a mila. People see it as a chesaron. If I've only got one bullet, then your bullet for me is a chulban. Then I see your mission as a chulban. You're going to get last sit and learn the whole day? When they could be out there saving Klal Yisrael? From the gas chambers of Auschwitz? From assimilation? They haven't got time to sit and learn. And Rav Mendel says, you're going to send guys out to go into Kiruv or whatever, who's going to sit and learn Torah? If you don't learn Torah, the world's not worth living in. And they were both right. So have one yeshiva where, you know, the guys that are supposed to do kiruv go do kiruv, the guys are supposed to sit and learn, and throw Machon Shlomo into it as well. The guys are supposed to go out there and work to support all of this. So let them learn half day and work half day. because he held that was the kiyum of the world. Without that, there was nothing to talk about. So put them all into one yeshiva. Rabbi Berkowitz gave a whole shiur on this one. Put them all into one yeshiva. You heard the shiur? Rabbi Berkowitz's shiur on this sugya? Put them all into one yeshiva and identify which kids should do kira, which should work and learn, and which should sit and learn the whole day. What are you talking about? I'm going to be in yeshiva with guys that are doing something that I hold tzachurban? Well, why tzachurban? Because I've only got one bullet. And the minute you start seeing the other guy's point of view and you start working together with him, you've lost. Because now you don't have one bullet anymore. Now you're not totally ready to give up your life for that. Because yeah, you'll compromise here and you'll compromise there. You'll never become a god. Different perspective. And therefore the Yisurim that come along on that one bullet path that you've chosen, you know they're yours. And you know that they're specifically, uniquely designed for you. And you have to deal with them and be challenged by them. And you know that Hashem sent them. So it's number one, me and ani lo yochol, ani lo matzliach, I'm a failure, and I'm depressed, and I'm... You get up and you go for it. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's painless. It's still Yisurim. But the side effects of the Yisurim aren't affecting you. You're dealing with the Yisurim, not the jealousy and the depression and all the other things that make the Yisurim infinitely more difficult than they really are. You're going to do that if you have some sense of what your mission in life is. There's no one in this room that would start a business without a mission statement, especially if he needs finance. You're going to go to the bank or one of these fintech, whatever, you're going to go get finance, you better have a mission statement. You get the guy telling him, can you lend me money for it? I want to start a new business. The guy says, what's the business? You tell him, I haven't worked it out yet, but just give me the bucks and I'll... We do that every Rosh Hashanah. We go to Hashem every Rosh Hashanah, and we tell him, give me another year of life. Hashem says, what are you going to do with this? I don't know, whatever, we'll wing it. You know, I'm going to get out of bed in the morning, and from then on, we'll wing it. Just blown through life. No one would do that. No one would start a business like that. You go off to the Basel Fair, you buy a whole bunch of machinery, you bring it here, you rent premises in Hatuv, you fit out the factory, whatever, you've got this amazing factory, you've got staff and everything, you go to the bank to get finance, what are you producing in the factory? I don't know. What do you mean? Well, you bought machines, you're going to build, you're going to, what are you going to make? You're going to make plastic chairs or fishing rods or Lamborghinis, what are you making in there? I don't know. How much money are you going to get? No one's going to give you money for that. That's what you do on Rosh Hashanah every year. Zachreinu l'chaim. What are you going to do with your life? I don't know. Come back again next year and say Zachreinu l'chaim. Okay, let's see what he has to say. Rinei, kashe yudim mikboinan v'kol ha'im aliyo. When a person meditates on everything we've been learning for the last... Who yodaya sheyesh lo tafkid yechoydi hashaykh ach barak lo. He knows there's a mission that's shaykh only to him. You want to go and start a yeshiva for people sitting and learning all day? Go do that. But that's not my mission, that's your mission. That's an electrician's job. I'm a plumber. Who chaye sa'uvde sho'olam sholem bifnatzmoy. And he knows that I'm a complete whole world on my own. Uba'olam shelo, achain kola'olam haim chushuchi bonim. We saw this yesterday. In my world, let's say, God forbid, this person, the guy who doesn't have children. In his world, no one has children. Whatever it is, he doesn't have children, he has a retarded child, whatever. In his world, nobody had a normal child. In your world, fine, you live on Mars. What's it going to do with me on Mars? People have children. Where I live, no one has children. That's my bayah. If a person would live alone in the world, he'd be on his own deserted island, whatever, he wouldn't be freaked out by the fact that other people have what he doesn't have and don't have what he doesn't have, because there's no one else there. Adam Rishon couldn't have been jealous. No room for jealousy in Adam Rishon's world. Because you're going to be jealous of.
Snake.
Tov, that's the Yetzer. I'm just saying, in his world, there was nothing min b'minoy by them. He was jealous of animals because they had a zub. We didn't have a zoo, whatever. We'll find a way to. But I'm just saying, essentially, if he never had children, he couldn't be jealous of anybody, because no one else had children. In his world, he had you. So tell me, he has a nice dimyon. It's a nice demiurge. God forbid I don't have children, and in my world no one's got children, so I'm not jealous. Yeah, but everyone's running around. So what are those things doing in the park? And what are these women sitting around talking about the whole day if no one has children in my world? It's a nice demiurge. He says it's not just demiurge. Zeh metziusa amiti shel adam. It's his actual genuine metzius. Hu yochid ba'olamoy. He is yochid ba'olamoy. And you're when Ilama Ba says you're alone. In Ilama Ba, person's alone. The Gemara says in Ilama Ba, you don't see anybody else. Each person sits on his own can and be alone. There is one aspect where you part of Klal Yisrael or whatever, but that's something else. But he's alone. In this world, you're alone as well. Ba'olama sheloi achen tzarech liyot chayle av shokol rachmanu litzlan ochar shulbanim avu bayla oylam oysa ademo oylam olim. In your world where you are, Hashem looks at you as a whole world. And Hashem gives him exactly what he needs for his job. Hashem's not playing games. He's not trying to crush you. He's not going to tell you to fix a burst pipe and not give you the tools or give you someone else's tools. If Hashem gave you, he'll give you what you need to do it. But what you don't have, you don't need. Wash it. Can't tell that to a child, teenager. Child's not supposed to live like that. Child's supposed to want everything and think everything's his. Because he's busy expanding and using that incredible male potential of enormous potential.
Surely but then, when you say no to a child, then it crushes them.
No. You can say no to a child that it crushes him. You can say no to a child and you try that it bulls him. Depends how you say no and why you say no and when you say no. No, he's supposed to. Hang on a second. He can't have an electric bicycle, but he should want one. A child, a 9-year-old who doesn't want an electric bicycle, you should take him for therapy. Why does he want an electric bicycle? There's a part of me that wants an electric bicycle as well. Men never grow up. There's a 6-year-old journeying around. You don't want an electric bicycle? Huh? It would be great.
I got one.
You don't want a speedboat? You don't want one of those, what do they call them? Those
jet skis?
You know, why shouldn't he want a jet ski? You have to say no, because he can't have one. But what do you mean you want a jet ski? Why shouldn't he want a jet ski? Why shouldn't he want to just sit and eat ice cream the whole day? I mean, why, I don't understand. It's not that he's wanting it that's the problem. It's you decided that you don't give your keys of the car to a 9-year-old. But why shouldn't he want to drive? You have a difference? And therefore you shouldn't say to the child, no, I'm not giving you an electric bicycle. Say to him, I'd love to buy an electric bicycle. You would. So that you could use it. I'd love to buy an electric bicycle or whatever else he wants. Right? But just right now, you know. I can't. But don't tell him no. Tell him I'd love to. I'd love to buy an electric bicycle just right now. I don't think it's appropriate. And not all, but why is it not appropriate? You know, don't continue that conversation. Because that goes nowhere. Don't tell him why not. See? Or if you really want to and you would buy it for him but you can't afford it, then say to him, you know, I really would love to buy it for you, but you know, right now things are a bit tough, but if you lose some money, we go down here, we buy you whatever. So, never say no to a child. I'd love to get it for you, I just, no. And this is my son that I had a dog. It's a dog. I'd also love to have dogs. I love dogs. I used to breed them, I used to train them. They're fantastic creatures. I understand Zelo Bishvili. But I understand why he wants a dog. Angry with him because he wants a dog. Why shouldn't a 13-year-old boy living on a farm want a dog? Something wrong with him? He wants a dog? Because he wants a dog. Explain to him, I'd love to get you a dog. And it's true, I would love to get him a dog. But you know, Akshav Zelo Shai. Then he started, but where? And then that's the challenge. That's a new story starting there. Can you keep quiet? Because 1 second into that argument, you know, you've lost. It's game over. It's a big mistake I see people making. Massive mistake. How could you want such a thing? You ever hear somebody, a mother saying that to a child? Huh? How could you want it? How could I want it? Well, of course he should want it. He should want everything. He should want to be a astronaut and a potato farmer and a cowboy and an Indian. He should want to be it all. Adam Godel Ainu Makanaba Yelet Katan Shakonala Mochonit Tsatsua Boy Buba. A mature Adam He's not jealous of some child because he got a new, you know, new whatever, spinner or flipper, whatever they call it, a new funny car, whatever. He's not jealous. If he finds himself being jealous of his kid who got a new booba or whatever, he should check out his maturity levels. That's out of your world. My grandson goes 3 years old, he got one of these dumpsters, you know, these like,
toys.
I don't know what they call it, one of these big things like, you know, that does the pach and whatever, whatever. You know, and the 8-year-old's jealous of him in the farm, they're all fighting over whatever. And I'm not jealous, or like, my patli if I have one of those things or not. Because that's not in my world. That's lo chelek me'olam sheli. That's not my world. That's not my world. When you start, you know, also getting in there and wanting your 5 minutes with it, and you know, start, you know, negotiating with the 8-year-olds, when you're getting your chance, then you should check out where you're holding. But I'm just, the marshal's a good marshal. The next door neighbor gets a fancy new car, you get jealous because it's part of your world. You think it's part of your world. But the neighbor's kid gets a 5-shekel plastic car. You sit there like, you know, like envious. Of course not, because you know, it's got nothing to do with you. So the same as the neighbor's kid's little plastic car's got nothing to do with you. So his new $45,000 Mercedes got nothing to do with you.
It's depending what are your expectations. That means if your neighbor has something you don't want to expect this one, or you are jealous. That means each one has his expectation.
If you understand what your tough kid is, and you understand that you don't need that because that a plumber needs and you're not a plumber. Yeah. He's got his mission, you got your mission. And he got what he got because that's what he needs, and you got what you got because of what you need.
That's one of the hardest things to make in Kutzel.
It's hard everywhere.
I found it very difficult.
Because of the Gashmis.
Yeah,
but see, that's because of the Ruchmis. Yeah, because his kid got into Panovich and your kid only got into Chemed. And it's the same. It's because the Chinuch system in the Torah world has moved much closer to the Goyisha world than it should be. Many things that you see in the Chinuch system today, I'm not going to go into it now, it's late, but has nothing to do with Jewish education. Mifchanim, tests. It had nothing to do with Jewish education. Nothing to do with Jewish education. If you want to do a test, then each kid sit in a room on his own and write a test. And nobody else knows his marks, and only he knows his marks because he's testing himself against himself. But why would you test somebody against someone else?
Because everything is based on competition. Let's say, do you want to be the best one? But
it's based on crushing people.
Yes.
You ever been to one of these prize givings? They have it in film schools as well, I heard now. I mean, it's whoever introduced prize givings into a Torah school, I mean, what's prize giving?
Making the other guy feel bad.
Not just making him feel bad. No, making him feel like a failure. You got 3 or 4 good kids in the class. Sometimes one obnoxious little cocky clever guy, whatever, who has everything. He gets all the prize, whatever. You know, he's the head boy and he got this and that, whatever. And whatever, there's 3 or 4 kids that get a prize. There's this other kid sitting there who's not so, you know, not so hotshot in all the things that they give out prizes for. And he's sitting there and he's platzing. He also wants to go home with a certificate saying that he's the best at something. So you just taught him he's a failure. That's the whole education system designed to do. To teach kids their failures. Why are you judging him against his standards? Judge him against his own standards and demand everything from him against his own standards, of course. But why are you demanding from him his standards?
There's also big an insurance on the school. So I'm saying, well, Koki Boits and Yadi, you know, I've done more numbers than you, and I've been.
And every aspect, everywhere.
I've been related because I was.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's everywhere. No, competition's good at a certain point as well. Soifim is a useful tool. But that's only when get a soifim. Ma'aba Chochma is only when you know who you are. I'm not trying to be like him. I'm trying to understand how he's able to do something that I feel I should also be able to do. How come he can sit and learn for 9 hours a day and I only learn for 8? But if you can only learn for 30 minutes a day and he's learning for 9 hours a day, why are you even looking at him? He's out of your range. But if you could use him to go from 8 to 9, I think you should use that. But that's because you're testing your own standards. You have your own vision of who you should be, and you're testing yourself against your own backdrop. But testing a kid against someone else's backdrop? Why? This guy was born with mathematical skills and whatever. This kid was born with autistic skills. So the math guy can't draw, and the drawing guy can't do math, and they both feel like failures in each other's to one. instead of taking the math content, if you're going to be a professor of applied mathematics, does off drawing. It's not your job in the world. Stop writing the arm tests. You want to doodle and fiddle a bit because it's useful for your growth and development? Great, do it. But why are you testing him against this guy who's the next Leonardo da Vinci or whatever? It's the whole thing, it's mamish designed, it's terrible. They have this thing, when I was in Toronto last time, they had graduation. You know, and they hand out prizes and they do this whole thing and they put in little black coats that they use in universities. And, you know, I had to wear one of those as well once. I didn't go back for my second graduation. No, the whole thing's bizarre. Sugar. So the goyim are doing it, Pesada. But what's a good Torah education? You can't raise individuals in a school environment to understand. It's very hard for a teacher with 30 kids in the class to bring out each one's potential. That the home has to do, understand. But why destroy any zig of individuality that the home didn't build? Why kill that? You can't build it, fine, but why destroy it?
It's hard, it's not impossible in a school. It's hard.
It's almost impossible to do. If you're gonna train, if you train teachers, you've got a chance. But as long as the teachers don't need training, you got no chance. You put them through proper training courses, avada, then you can start. Avada, not even a question. And you can see teachers that have learned how to be teachers.
Right.
Today, if you're not going to train the teacher, and you know, it's very hard to introduce it into the Haredi Torah world. Very, very hard. There are. In Ramat Beit Shemesh, there were a lot of rabbis that went on courses, I know. And you see the difference afterwards. I'm going to a course now, whatever, and a couple of rabbis from the cheder there and whatever, and you can see it's eye-opening for them. You can see the filters drop. The guys are like mums, you can see that like the balloon blowing up. It's so empowering for them. He's ever going into the class or whatever, and he's no tools, whatever, and the kids are mums pushing, and it's a fight and it's a battle the whole day. He goes into class now, whatever, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but he can start enjoying his teaching because he's got the kelim to know how to deal with the kids. It's empowering for them. If you just take a guy who's a failed avreich and he wants to be a rebbe in cheder because he can't really learn full time, this is the only honorable way out of koilel for him. So like he's not a busher to his family and his wife, whatever, and the whole story. And you dump him in a class and he's going to do what his rebbe did, and why shouldn't I? I'm just doing what my rebbe did. How are you going to get him to raise individuals in a class of even 15 kids? 10 kids wouldn't be able to do it. We have to recognize, and it's a painful recognition for a bal tshuva, and it's a whole nother shia. But there's it's very easy to slip into being a cultish, mindless groupie in the Torah world as well. Very easy to become a mindless groupie in the Torah world and not recognize and understand this koyach of individuality. And unfortunately, you see that in the schools. That's not the only place you see it, but when you see that in the schools, when you have rebbes and manahelim, Rahman's, I know certain manahels like that. So what do you want from the teachers? What do you want from the kids? When the manael is a mindless groupie, not in a Western sense of being a groupie, it's a groupie. He just does whatever because
it filters
himself. He himself doesn't know what it means to be an individual. He doesn't understand that the more you keep Torah and the more you medaktak in aloch and mitzvahs, the more individual you're supposed to become. However paradoxical that might seem to you, Rav Moshe and Rav Aaron weren't slouches in keeping Torah. They had anything in common? You know what different they were? All the Gedolim. It's an amazing thing, no? You would, that the more a person was keeping Torah, the more he was keeping Shulchan Aruch, the more he would look like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And you see, it's exactly the opposite. Where do you find the groupies and the mindless, brainless groupies? Is in the guys that are not ready to know what they're doing. When you get to the Gedolim Yisrael, Homamash, Medakdek, the Chazanish and the Briskerov. Mustama, you know, they both got first prize on, you know, Dikduk Halacha. Yeah? When they met, they barely had anything to talk to each other about. What are you going to talk about? They open up their svarim. Look at a Rashi and look at the Tosfos. Look at Rabbeinu Tam and look at Rashi. Mustama, they were keeping a locha biduk the same. I guess Rashi ate at Rabbeinu Tam's Pesach Seder back and forth. Mustama, they relied on each other's halachic. You would expect them to be little robots. And you see the exact opposite. It's a remarkable thing. The exact opposite. They become rabid individuals, flaming individuals. Rabbi Akiba, Rabbi Tafan, go learn about their lifestyles. What are you talking about? No?
One of the kids who I work with wrote on his WhatsApp.
Who?
One of
the kids I work with, he wrote on his WhatsApp, he said, I'm not off the dam. I'm on my own dam.
So sorry, what's the second part?
He said, I'm not off the dam, I'm on my own dam.
Question is,
I figured when we try to cultivate them on their dam, which is their kofas, and help them become their
kids. Of course.
Problem is, like you're saying, it's
I don't know any kid who's off the derech. I don't know what the derech. No, in order to have somebody off the derech, you have to define a derech that everybody's supposed to be on.
Yeah, who's derech? Yeah.
There's no derech that everyone's supposed to be on, except the person who's supposed to be on that.
Yes.
Show me Torah and mitzvahs. I find that that's a minimum. But there's other minimums as well. He has to be a mensch. He has to be working on his character. He has to be nice to other people. He should try not to fear other people. A lot of those are also part of a derech. So say he's not shomer Torah of a mitzvah, or he's not 100% shomer Torah of mitzvahs. I mean, the minimum standard we always had for a person was he shomer Shabbos. God shomer Shabbos, he's part of the gang. No matter what else he's doing, he's not shomer Shabbos already. He's chutz v'tchum. That's a minimum definition at the halachic level. But you can't, you don't know either, because some kids have it very easy getting up in the morning and they love davening, so they go off and daven. That's a sugi of Lefi's Lefum Agra Schara. According to the effort, so is the reward. You get a girl who just is naturally tanur, and she just naturally wears these skirts the way she's supposed to, and she's into the, you know, wearing grey, you know, she's into all that stuff. That's just not an assoyin. And you got another kid who, like, kills herself, you know, to get a skirt like onto the knee, and you look at the two and you think, wow, this girl, she's off the derech, you know, she's a pritzen and whatever. And the other one, when they get to Shemaim in this particular area, this girl is walking around with a skirt above her knees. Is, you know how big she is? I'm saying, you can't. Mitzvah says don't judge a person until you're standing in his shoes, and since you'll never ever stand in his shoes, stop judging other people, because you don't know. It's the same with learning. You get a guy who loves learning, he's into it, whatever. He sits learning 16 hours a day, whatever. You look at this guy and you're like, you're platzing. This other bocher who, after 3 hours of morning seder, is ready to explode. But he hangs and he learns every morning. He's 3 hours and he pushes and he fights and he cries and he davens and I don't know who's getting more reward. This guy's bringing out his potential. He's building real muscle. This guy's learning 18 hours a day. I don't know if he's getting too much. A buddy's getting scar. I'm not saying not. But did he really change? He did anything with his life? Rav Berkowitz told me, Rav Shmuel Auerbach came to Eishet Torah many, many years ago to visit, to see the place. So he went into one of the Gemara classes and he said, I want to be left alone with the Talmidim. So they left him alone. He came out half an hour later crying. Crying? I know some pretty heavy kids come to Eishet Torah, but what did they do to make Rav Shmuel cry? Rav Berkowitz said he was like, Rav Shmuel came in the class crying, he was like, what did they do to you? He said, well, what happened? He said, I started learning with the kids or whatever, and they started asking questions, and I noticed these kids are really holding. These guys, mamash, know what's going on. They're not just, Bali Chub or whatever. These guys have got basic disorders. So I asked the one kid, how long have you been learning for? He said, Tommy, 2 years. He said, this guy's grown more in 2 years than I've grown in my whole life. That means, yes, he's the God Lador. He's the next God Lador, whatever he is. He's a Talmud Chochim, no Shas Bokne or whatever. But he got born with it. How much have you changed here? How much have you used on this piece of paper? This kid's grown more in 2 years than I've grown my whole life. He burst out crying. Lefum Agra Schara. When you look at this Baal Tshuva who's been learning for 2 years, you have a look at God and you see, oh wow, he's done something. You look at FAB, he's just doing what he's doing because that's what you do around here. Where's he? He's done nothing. There's not an ounce of muscle in his body that he did anything to develop. When you look at another guy, he's a 90-pound weakling, but when you have a look, you see that 40 of those 90 pounds are cool his effort. You have to tell kids this. It's not enough that we need to be machazak on it. You have to tell a kid who's struggling in an area with this. Tell him, you made davening once this week. Mom is jealous of you. Ah, tauved olah. You know, you have to explain what you mean. Shtiot. No. For me, I love davening. I get up at opus 5 in the morning. I run to davening. I love it. You're davening so hard. If I was you, I would never get to davening once a week. Never. You don't like it, you don't enjoy it. You're up till 3 o'clock in the morning. To get up at 9 o'clock in the morning is mamush, and you're so in otsu. I'm makani you, your son. To tell the kids that. Otherwise, they think they bumped.
Yeah. Only they don't believe us. Huh?